Now, about 20 minutes out of town here, there's a beautiful site owned by the National Parks and Wildlife Service. It's about 70 acres inside, located on the Little Brosna Callows, and it provides a variety of habitats from typical meadows to a mixed woodland. It's also a terrific location to observe some of the huge variety of wildlife in this neck of the woods, particularly so for me, since they have installed a wheelchair-accessible bird hide for use by the general public. Yesterday afternoon, I took a drive out to see the Callows site with Richard Collins here. There we met NPWS wildlife ranger Noel Bugler, who introduced me to some of the special features on the site.
Okay, so at the moment we're in the car park of the bird hide for overlooking the Little Brosna Callows SPA, which is a special protection area for birds. So as you can see on the little field we are in at the moment, it's a little haggard that was associated with the old house. And if you look closely at the field, you'll see a species richness of grassland, scrub, hedgerows. So that's very important for a wildlife point of view, for diversity, for insects especially, and then for everything associated with that also then as well. So we're standing here in a car park that National Parks and Wildlife Service have developed over phases over time. We acquired the property over 10 years ago. So our aim is to provide a facility for local people and others to come and enjoy the jewel that is the Little Brosna Callows. So as you can see, we're looking at a kind of a green tunnel of vegetation. It's a boardwalk leading down to the hide, and the hide then overlooks the Little Brosna Callows. A manager of mine at the time, Ciara Flynn, was very interested in pushing the wheelchair accessibility side of things. So she did, and we got it done. So hopefully it's nice for people not to be excluded, for them to come down and enjoy the Callows the same as everybody else. So we tried to have a little small car park here adjacent to the walkway, where a wheelchair accessible car can come and park and get out. The surface, we tried to compact it as best we can. It's an ongoing process, so we'll take all advice on board as well. So we'll try and improve it at all stages. The walkway itself is about 20 metres down to the height, which is made of timber. There is nails, or there's staples driven for an anti-slip device. So I've had one review already to say that some of those staples might be a little bit high. So it'd be interesting to hear Olin's view on that as well.
Well, I hope I don't get my wheels punctured for a start. I'm having a look at the car park here. It's actually not too bad. You were describing a lot of gravel to me, and I was afraid it was going to be these, you know, like pebble stones, and there's lots of pebbles on the way up here. But this is fairly well compacted. I would say that for somebody in a straightforward manual wheelchair, it would be a little bit difficult. You'd want somebody with you, unless you were kind of one of these Olympic athletes who can pretty much do anything. But at the same time, I got my little attachment here, my little motorbike attachment for my wheelchair, so I should be able to manage around here no problem. The main thing is that there's no steps, that's the big thing, and that there's nothing. Hopefully I'll have a look at these spikes now and see, do they staples, see, do they, if they puncture my wheels, we're in trouble.
Hopefully not. But no, it's interesting you say that, because we came back a second time, and the contractor, a friend of his, was in a wheelchair, and he had got advice from him to say a bit more finer gravel and compacted, so we took that on board, and hopefully we'll get there eventually anyway. So if you want to follow me down to the bird hide, we can see the rest of it then.
No worries. Here I go. Oh, I see all the staples here. Well, they're not sharp. They're staples, but they're like little loops, you know, and it's the loopy side that's up. So I don't think there's anything going to stick into a wheel and puncture it. But so far so good. This is beautiful, actually. Just the walkway itself is gorgeous. The trees and the greenery and plenty of insects as well.
That's the big thing with grasslands like that, plenty of insects, Lepidoptera, moths and butterflies especially. Okay, so we're here in the bird hide looking out over the Little Brosna Callows, and you can see that it's like a timber wooden structure with hatches to allow viewing out onto the callows for bird life, more so in winter obviously, for wintering wildfowl. So the hatches, there's four hatches that are wheelchair accessible, and one, two, three hatches then for bird watchers to use normally.
This is fantastic. I love this. It's absolutely brilliant. It's so accessible. I love the fact that the actual shelves here that you can close up as windows, they open up as shelves, and they're the perfect level for a wheelchair user to take a look out. It's funny. It's kind of like your sink in your bathroom. It's at the right level for you, and you can look out, and there's a vast area you can see out there. It's absolutely vast. So I'm just going to pull into one of these viewing platforms. Sorry, I nearly crashed you out of the way there. Now, so I'm just pulling into this little platform here. I can get my knees right underneath here and lean on it. It's brilliant. What are we likely to see out here? Now, describe the diversity of wildlife we can take a look at here.
So what we're looking at the moment, it's summertime in the Caddo's obviously, so we're looking at a hay meadow, an uncut hay meadow, which is due to be cut at any stage now once the weather settles for about a week. In wintertime, just at the bottom of the field here is the Little Brosna River, which is the county boundary between County Offaly and County Tipperary. It's an undrained floodplain. In wintertime, unfortunately sometimes now in summertime, but mainly in wintertime, it'll flood. So this, in wintertime, you'll be looking at a giant lake from about 9 kilometres from here, from the Angler's Rest pub up to Victoria Dock.
I think it's likely to flood in the next 15 minutes if the sound of that thunder is anything to go by. There's a lot of farm animals as well.
The Caddo's need farming to kind of continue as an important wildlife habitat because there are two types of use of the grasslands here. There's grazing by cattle and horses mainly here, a little bit of sheep, but also then there's meadows, like lowland hay meadows. So what we're looking out here is a meadow which will be cut soon, like I say, and that will be harvested in for hay bales and to be fed to cattle over winter. So the Caddo's themselves, it needs management every year by either grazing or cutting for hay or for silage.
What is the direct effect on the existing wildlife when you cut like that, when farmers come in and cut?
Traditionally, species-rich grasslands, like going back maybe 50, 60 years ago after World War II, a lot of the grasslands across the country in Ireland would have been species-rich and it would have been a slower pace, like the machinery would have been slower and not as big as today. So today you have different species, actually you have improved agricultural species over a lot of the grasslands in Ireland just for agricultural production. These grasslands, once you go in, you'll generally only get one cut late in the summer, around about this time. Earlier cutting then can affect ground nesting birds. So like in the rest of the country, since post-World War II, there have been more of an increase in mechanisation for cutting. So earlier cutting dates and faster machines, which can have devastating effects on ground nesting birds, corncrake being one prime example.
So is this a kind of a trade-off between, say, the NPWS and the likes of yourselves as a conservation ranger and the farming community?
No, it can be. I mean, traditionally, the Caddo's themselves, over time, this Caddo's, it's an SPA, so it's recognised for birds. But that didn't just happen overnight. That happened for generations because of the nature. Naturally, it flooded in winter, so it never got an opportunity to be improved. So there are, with the SPA, there is still a responsibility for landowners to kind of keep it in a particular way that's important for wildlife, that nothing can be done to the Caddo's that will possibly affect the bird use of them. But in fairness, it doesn't happen anyway. People have managed it in a traditional way for a long time. So they've kind of kept it in this way. There's just a flash of lightning there, sorry.
Flash of lightning there. Can you explain the word Caddo's, by the way?
Caddo's, Cali, it's a kind of an Irish word. It's really kind of wet meadows. It would be like where a river floods, or it's part of the year, it'll be inundated with water, underwater.
We have some fine sets of binoculars here. You also have a magnificent looking telescope. So what are we likely to see when we look out these little hatches here?
Okay, so like I said, in summertime, you won't get the same diversity of bird species. Just in saying that, we have a grey heron flying across our site there. So they are common, actually, on the Caddo's. But if we came back here in winter, we would definitely get a lot more wintering wildfowl species like Greenland white-fronted goose, Hooper swan, black-tailed godwits, golden plover, lapwing, etc., that type of thing. Also, you can see it's important also parts of the Caddo's for breeding waders, lapwing, curlew. Well, curlew, unfortunately, are on the decrease, but lapwing, redshank and snipe especially.
Well, Noel, it is great to be back in the Little Brosna. It's one of the great meccas for bird watchers in Ireland. And we have, I think, something like 39 internationally important haunts in Ireland. That is to say, 39 places which have significant numbers of a particular species of bird. And this is one of them. It ranks in the top 10. Where would you place it, Noel?
Well, I'd be parochial, so I put it number one in my own mind. But it is, it's a brilliant site and underused really. And this hide will hopefully help that and kind of advertise it as being a good place to come. But it does. One of the other criteria is that it regularly holds more than 20,000 wintering wildfowl. So you'll see spectacular displays of godwits turning in the sun and golden plover. So it really is a jewel in the ground of the Midlands.
You mentioned the godwits, the black-tailed godwits. I think that's a bird that should be better known to the public because it's a lovely bird. It's a particularly attractive bird. Godwit means a good creature, good to eat. But my memories of being here of vast numbers of godwits coming in. These would be Icelandic birds that come to Ireland. And I've seen it written, I don't know if it's true, you might be able to verify this, that something like 10% of all the godwits in Iceland come here in the winter at times. Is that the case?
That was the case. There was, we did a little bit of work on that where there was coloured leg rings on the godwits, so you could get re-sightings. So Daniel Hayhoe from England did a lot of work as well on these. So there are up to 10% of the population. So it does, that indicates how important the site is. If anything was wrong with the site for whatever reason, it's very important, you know, to manage the population. So it is up to 10% of the Icelandic population of godwits would use the site, especially in late, more so in late spring, around April time, March, April time. But they can come back from any time, September time on.
Now, these are big waders. They're not as big as curlews, but they have straight bills or slightly upturned bills. They have a strange plural. It's called a godliness. You know, a wisp of snipe and a murmuration of starlings, but a godliness, believe it or not, of godwits. And there's another one called the bar-tailed godwit, and it's called an ungodliness. Did you ever hear such nonsense? But that is the way people use words in the world of wildlife. Now, this creature is an extraordinary. He probes. He's a long bill and he probes the farmland for miles around, sort of thing, and then he roosts here. He comes in here to shelter and exchange opinions about where the best place to go with his friends here at night. That's more or less the pattern, is it?
That's it, yeah. The callows themselves are important for them. They come in, like you say, to roost, but they also feed here, and there have been re-sightings here on the northwest coast of France, Portugal, I think also in England. So it's very interesting to kind of get the data on the species from these coloured rings.
Now, the other great exotic visitor is, of course, the Greenland white-fronted goose. Now, I remember 20, 30 years ago being here, there were quite big numbers of this beautiful goose here. He was a very exotic creature and lived in only very wild places. It was a privilege to kind of see him. Have we still got them here, and have we still got them in internationally important numbers here?
We do. The callows themselves are particularly associated with the Greenland white-fronted goose in my mind and in other people's minds as well. It's an inland Wexford slob, of course, would be well known for the geese, but here there was always an important flock. So around about when I started in 99, there was almost 600. So unfortunately, though, that has declined back down to about 220, 230. But there's been international declines in the bird, more to do with, I think, problems on its breeding areas over in Greenland. So it's a bird that comes in from Greenland, stages in Iceland, and overwinters in Ireland and Scotland. So again, it just shows that we have a responsibility to mind our corner or mind the bird when it's here in our part of the world.
And he depends on local farms because he feeds on grass and so on, and then comes in here to rest at night and that sort of thing. So he's a kind of product of farming practice here, really, and the management of grasslands.
That's it, exactly. Actually, the geese will actually like to go into reseeded grasslands, which is unusual at times because it's like a junk food fix for them, the nice, sweet, new grass. So they'll roost. And then there's, just to point out as well, on the callows here, there's a wildfowl sanctuary where the open season for hunting is closed. Well, you can't hunt geese, obviously, anyway, or white-fronted geese, you can't. But the sanctuary is very important for them to roost safely or to feel safe at night in the middle of the kind of the winter lake.
You two could talk with great expertise about birds all day long, but I see if anybody arrives in this height and they don't have your level of expertise, you have various posters on the walls, including one, Birds of the Boglands. So presumably if you're taking a look out and you see a species you don't recognise, you can turn straight to this poster here, am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few posters on the back wall. Some of the posters, there mightn't be the best clarity, but it will give you a definite indication of the kind of the size and the form of the bird that you may be looking at. So it does. It's a little aid or a help for people that need it.
I'm also intrigued, as you were locking in your telescope there, each of the little hatches, each of the shelves that drop down to reveal the hatch, they have a little, what is it, a little bracket on it so you can attach your telescope, and each one of them has that. Is that typical of birdwatchers? Do birdwatchers always have these brackets that attach to these things?
Not necessarily, but we did find that for guys that are like serious birdwatchers, I suppose, that have a telescope, like a lot of people will just have the binoculars, but for telescopes, it's easier to manage in a tripod, so we decided to put one on each of the wheelchair accessible hatches here, that if you can just, it's called like a window mount that you can lock on, put your scope on, and it keeps it really steady.
Can we set up your telescope and we'll have a look out?
Certainly we can, yeah. Hopefully we might see some. We might possibly see fallow deer knocking about as well, so that's another species that we could see, a mammal, but yeah, we'll set her up.
I'm going to take through a look through this telescope. This is amazing. It's your own telescope, is it?
It is. It's a work issue telescope, so yeah.
This is absolutely top class. The clarity is absolutely brilliant. You can see so far into. Oh, I think I see a bird of prey. You'll have to tell me what that is.
Kestrel. A kestrel just hunting over the kind of long grasses there at the bottom. Yeah, very good.
How many of these are there around the country?
there are a few Wexford Wildfowl Reserves. They definitely have wheelchair accessible hides. Donegal would have them also. So like the wetland sites, they maybe more are needed, certainly, to kind of have access to these sites. There was another hide on the Tipperary side that got obliterated in the February storms, and so other hides would be in North County Dublin, in Rogerstown Estuary, that type of thing. It's a great way for people to come and enjoy wildlife in out of the rain, which has just started here now as well.
I drove up here now with you in the car in front of me, and there were a couple of gates that we came through. If a wheelchair user were coming up here on his own or on her own, what's the story? Do they have to open gates? Do they call ahead? What do they do?
That is an issue at the moment. The Callows themselves, where we come down the laneway, it's actually a right of way for other farmers using the Callows, so gates are needed in case of stock coming in or stock going out. So that is a problem at the moment, that the gates aren't wheelchair accessible from the car. So you really might need a companion with you at the moment. Now, we're looking at it for over time to see if we can do something with automatic gates or electronic gates, but that will be kind of a medium-term project.
No, thanks a million. This is an absolutely terrific site. I recommend it to anybody, whether you're in a manual wheelchair, whether you're in a powered wheelchair or anything. It's certainly, the car park is only a quick nip down here to the hide. It's easy for me with my little machine, but it's brilliantly accessible. I love the levels of the hatches here, and it's just, I absolutely love the positioning of this hide, because there's a vast, vast area of meadowlands you can look at. Well done. Thanks very much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Owen. Thanks to yourself, Richard, for coming here, and hopefully know that the message will get out there, because we want it to be used and for people to enjoy the habitats there and species that are bird like this down here.
After 4 o'clock, we're going to be talking to Niall Hatch, because it's not the only wheelchair-accessible bird hide in Ireland. There aren't many of them, but obviously I have a vested interest in those that are accessible. Richard, you've been to a bunch of them around the country.
I have, and around Europe and America, all kinds of places.
It was pretty nice last night.
This is in the first rank. A bird hide is a military bunker, essentially.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And it's not just the hide, but what's around it. You can get into it in a totally secluded fashion. It's all beautifully verdant, dense vegetation orange. You can creep in and out without disturbing the birds, and when you look out, it's almost an ancient wilderness, a beautiful sward untouched by man, almost.
And if you are coming down to Birr Castle to view the absolutely brilliant science centre down here and the old telescope, it's about 20 minutes out of town. Get directions from the NPWS, well worth a visit. I love the way you kind of go through this ramp, and this, you're like in almost in this mini wilderness of trees and greenery, and it's incredible. And the next thing, you emerge into this hut and you look out over this vast, beautiful meadow, some healthy vegetation and grasslands. Mind you, we got a bit of rain, thunder last night, and heat. No wonder it's so lush.
We added to it, didn't it, that wonderful thunderstorm over us. It was
absolutely
back to primeval times, you know, this beautiful Finland-type habitat with loads of grasses and meadowsweets and all kinds of things.
And Terry was down at the Sea Eagles one day.
Yes, there's a new viewing centre down there. That's well worth a visit to. That's just down in Mount Shannon there.
That's
on Loch Derg.
That's accessible too, isn't
yes, it is.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's a fantastic place.
Well, look, stay with us. Niall Hatch is going to be taking us through some of the others around the country and talking about the type of wild birds that we can see on Callows in the Midland. Niall Hatch is in Dublin, as we were saying. Niall, have you been down to this fantastic accessible bird hide that we were at in the little Brosna Callow site in Offaly?
I have. It's magnificent, isn't it? As you said, it's really expansive. You have this great view over such wonderful wildlife habitat. And what I really like about it is that it really changes through the seasons as well. So you really can't have a bad day out there. And even, you know, if the weather is bad and the rain is falling, you have, you know, lovely shelter and protection there too. So I definitely recommend it to anybody.
It was lovely to go out during the summer. It covered in midges, of course, and
yes,
there was thunder and lightning, and it was about to spill. We managed to avoid the rain, but it's particularly good during the winter, is that right?
It is, because that's when you're going to get the geese in. You were talking there about the Greenland white-fronted geese, which obviously in Birdwatch Ireland, they're very close to our hearts. That's the bird that features in our logo, and that's a really special creature. Ireland is so important for them in terms of their world population as a wintering bird. They only usually arrive in October, and of course, most of the callows there will be flooded by that stage, so it is quite totally different from the grassland you're seeing at the moment, and then the wildflower meadows, it becomes a lake. It's amazing.
obviously I have a vested interest as a wheelchair user. I'm interested in any sites around the country that are wheelchair accessible. Are there many of them? We've talked about two. Terry's one and in Clare, with the Sea Eagles, Mount Shannon, that we've discussed before in the show, and this one. Are there many around the country, Niall?
There are a growing number. There aren't as many as we would like, and certainly it's something that I think that needs to be improved upon. Certainly, one that I would definitely recommend is down in the Wexford Wildfowl Reserve, just north of Wexford Town. The Wexford Slobs there's a reserve. It's a joint Birdwatch Ireland and National Parks and Wildlife Service reserve, and there's some excellent wheelchair facilities there, and you get great views as well of green and white-fronted geese and godwits and some of the other birds that you mentioned. At our own Birdwatch Ireland flagship East Coast Nature Reserve in Newcastle in County Wicklow, we have a very nice wheelchair accessible hide with a very good ramp that has a viewing platform on the way up as well, with special ports there for wheelchair users to look out through. We have wheelchair bays inside the hide, and it's very close to a really nice boardwalk that goes right through some of the wetland habitats. You can actually take the wheelchair right out over the water and into the reeds, where you get lots of birds. Particularly in the summer, you get lots of things like sedge warblers, even now reed warblers and reed buntings nesting in there and singing away. So it's a really nice experience. You can immerse yourself in that.
I would say to anybody, just a word of warning, you know, there are challenges putting these out, because it's in the middle of the wild, so there are challenges putting these things up. And certainly with the one in the Little Brosna, the ramp was probably a bit steep for many. I have a machine that kind of tows me around the place, so it might have been a bit easier for me.
I have an engine.
But if you are on your own and you're a manual wheelchair user, it's probably best to bring somebody along with you. Niall, Anna is itching to ask you about corncrakes.
No, just whenever I hear the word callows, I think corncrakes.
Yes.
And I didn't hear any mention of corncrakes in the wonderful erudite report that Richard did before the news. So what's the story on corncrakes and the callows, or indeed on corncrakes in Ireland generally? Has this been any kind of a year for them?
The situation with corncrakes in Ireland in the grand scheme of things is a very sad story over the last few decades. Going back to the 1950s, the census of the population that was done then found that there were 50,000 pairs of corncrakes in Ireland, and today we're talking, you know, around 130 pairs, give or take. We don't have figures yet in for this year. I know the National Parks and Wildlife Service are working on that, but certainly the Shannon Callows were for a very long time one of the main strongholds for corncrakes left in Ireland. And we ourselves in Birdwatch Ireland, we have an office in Banagher where they would monitor the corncrakes from. Unfortunately, as was mentioned in the report there, over the last few years, summer flooding has become an increasingly frequent part of life in the Callows. This usually just used to be mainly a winter event, but now it's happening during the summer as well. And what's happened is that because corncrakes nest on the ground, the flooding obviously washes away the eggs or chills the eggs and the chicks, and they fail. And so the population just dwindled very dramatically over the course of just a couple of years, until there was just a handful, of bare minimum of them clinging on still. So this year we're not entirely sure exactly what the figures are like, but it's certainly that there's very few left, and I think we're looking at the extinction of the corncrake in the Shannon Callows, unfortunately, because of the summer flooding, which, you know, there are many different factors behind that, climate change perhaps being the major one, but it's been a big problem for the birds and also for the landowners and the farmers in the area as well. Luckily, elsewhere in Ireland, corncrakes are doing better, particularly on islands and sort of meadow lands in Donegal, Mayo, Galway, parts of Kerry as well. Some of the islands off Donegal, particularly Inishbofin and Tory Island, are real strongholds for them now, and they're definitely places I would recommend people to go in the summertime, particularly in the month of June and early July, to see them. And you have a good chance of seeing them there. Actually, they sit up on walls on Tory Island and sing there. But of course,
Inishbofin in Donegal, you're speaking of.
It is correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But there are many other islands around Mayo as well where they do still occur, and but it's really, you know, a shadow of the former numbers that we had in Ireland. The habitat just doesn't exist for them anymore, sadly, and it's a bird that's really disappeared from much of the country, which is very sad.
Yeah, we were out in the Inish Keys there at the end of June, and I didn't hear any corncrakes there at all. Were they ever recorded off the Inish Keys?
I believe so. I don't have the figures for this year there, and I know that some census work has been done, but there was once a time not so long ago where there was hardly a part of Ireland where you didn't have corncrakes. I mean,
people complained.
Exactly.
They couldn't sleep at night for the noise of them. Isn't it terrible that they're gone?
It's such a difference, and it's, you know,
I absolutely love the sound of the corncrake. I think it's one of the most charming sounds out
there. Yeah, I do too. I mean, maybe if I had to listen to dozens of them going all night long outside my window, I might think differently about it. But certainly, having heard, I was lucky enough a few years ago to go to lead a nature tour in eastern Poland, where they still have large numbers of corncrakes, and in a very callows-like habitat, these seasonal floodplains and wildfires. wildflower meadows. And it was just amazing to hear the corncrakes there. Yeah. And I'll never forget, I was with a group of people, many of whom were elderly people, and who hadn't heard corncrakes in years, and some spontaneously just burst into tears. It was such an emotional experience for them to hear the sound of their childhood.
I think we have the sound of a corncrake if you want to dig it out, guys, back at base. But Terry, you want to ask something?
No, I was just going to say another problem a number of years ago was the birds with the corncrake. They used to nest in the centre of the field, or where they did nest in the field, and when the farmer was mowing, he was mowing from the outside in. And I think it was realised then if you were to mow from the inside out that it would give the bird a chance. They don't really like to lift off the ground. They flutter along the ground, even though they will travel from Africa. That's the amazing thing. But what happens was they were being confined to this small little central region, and unfortunately they were being hit by the blades on the behind the tractor. Now, I know that you and Birdwatch Ireland did a lot of the silver birds out there, but
that's corncrake there. Yes,
yeah, that's it there. But I know you and Birdwatch Ireland, you were involved with a scheme to try and get farmers to cut from the inside out. Has that worked, or has it been of any help?
Oh, it was very successful at the time, and I know that it was done in with a conjunction between Birdwatch Ireland and the National Parks and Wildlife Service. So certainly the what was happening, as you mentioned there, was when meadows were cut from the outside in, sort of spiralling inwards, it would leave a little island of vegetation in the middle, and that's where the corncrakes would stay. And of course, the adults are reluctant to fly, but the chicks and the eggs can't fly, so they would just be killed by the final pass of the mower. So when mowing from the inside out started, thereby pushing the corncrakes and the chicks into the next field gradually, so they were away from the blades. It was very successful, but unfortunately in the Callows, they just couldn't compete with the summer flooding, which really put paid to the population of corncrakes in much of the area. And corncrakes are very short-lived birds as well. They tend to return to pretty much the same field year after year, so you have to build up a sort of critical mass in an area before they'll colonise new areas. And if they have two bad breeding seasons in a row where there's no productivity, they don't have any chicks raised, well then the population just disappears, because you won't ordinarily get a corncrake having a third breeding season. So it was really a really bad set of circumstances that has led to their disappearance from the area. Certainly, long term we would hope that they may recolonise if a solution could be found to the flooding problems. And certainly we in Birdwatch Ireland were working very hard at some of our reserves to try and create new corncrake habitats so that the birds can colonise that area. It's worked quite successfully for us in the Mullet Peninsula in Mayo so far.
There's a glimmer of hope on the horizon, Niall. Fota Wildlife Park are raising corncrakes for release into the wild. Now, Whipsnade in England has done this, and one of the interesting things about it is the baby corncrakes must not be allowed to see the sky until they go to the place where they are to be released. And so, in time, hopefully, if this project works, and it's going very well, I gather, at the moment, corncrakes will be taken from Fota up to suitable habitat and allowed to see the sky for the first time up there. And when they migrate, that will be their fix for return. Now, if this project works, we will have a new influx of corncrakes into the wild, hopefully.
And hopefully that will work, so long as the habitat is there to support the actual breeding population, which is another part of the struggle. But certainly it's very interesting work. I know it's been very successful in places like the Netherlands, where they've done this, and in parts of England. I think it's amazing, isn't it, the way they have to set that natural GPS by seeing the stars, and that it's all part of the wonders of migration. Magnificent birds.